Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this interaction. We will start with the introductions, and hopefully by the time we do the introductions, we'll get to the business of the day proper. We had expected 11, or we had invited 11 of you to interact with us, and we have not received any apologies. So as you introduce yourself, we will tick off who is here, who isn't here, and we will do the same as members of Parliament. But that's to say that the Department of Correctional Services has a constitutional mandate of oversight and scrutiny of the Department of Correctional Services. And you as chairpersons of the parole board are key players in that department. So for us to be able to do our oversight effectively, we need to talk to all stakeholders, and that's what we're doing today. Members across you understand the role, function, and responsibility of the parole board. They understand it. So we're not going to have a discussion around the role, function, and responsibility. We don't expect you either to give up any information around the roles, functions, and responsibilities, because we understand that. What we really want from you is an indication of the effectiveness of your responsibility. That's what we want to understand. And if you're not, or have not been effective, why have you not been effective? That's what we want from you, and the rest we will determine on our own after we've had our interactions with you. So we'd want to find out from you, have you been effective? Because we believe your responsibility is a very, very serious one. If you've not been effective, why have you not been effective? It is not an invitation for a gripe session, ladies and gentlemen. We really don't want a gripe session. We want you to be able to say to us, this is what we've done. These have been the shortcomings. And this is what we propose is done to improve the responsibility. We will have an interaction with the department after we've had an interaction with you, and then are able to say to the department, this is what practitioners on the ground are saying, what are you saying as a department? So we're really not going to allow you to come and give us the gripe session or the issue that you really want to put on the table and use this platform to do that. If you really want to have a gripe session, you are very welcome to see me after the meeting. But today we want to understand, are you effective? If you're not effective, why are you not effective? And what do you plan to do to make yourself effective? Those questions will be posed to the department as well when we interact with them around the parole board. So hopefully we've set the scene for what this meeting is going to be about. We'll also allow you 10 minutes. We've received some presentations. I'm not sure that our members have had opportunity to look through them. So you'll be given 10 minutes to either talk to your presentation or talk from the cuff. And once everybody has given their 10 minutes input, we will then open it up for engagement with the department. I mean with the members of the committee, where we will then pose questions. So everybody will be given 10 minutes back to back. And it will be done in the following order. We're going to kick off with Mr. Maketlo from Kimberley, Mr. Dichaba from Portland will follow, Ms. Luzipo from St. Albans will be number three. Kontwana from Portsmouth will be number four. Mkhobo from Johannesburg will be number 5. M. Jones from Johannesburg will be number 6. M. Maimela from Leeuwkop will be number 7. Mkwanazi from Leeuwkop will be number 8. Mukisi from Boxburg will be number 9. Msimang from Barberton will be number 10. And Shabangu from Durban will be number 11, so it will be in that order. You've got 10 minutes each, and if in your introduction you can tell us whether you're the chair, you're the vice chair, whether you co-opted, whether you're a fake or whatever the case might be, just tell us who you are so that when we interact with you we are able to interact with correct people and not ghosts or imposters. That's how we're going to operate, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vincent Smith, chair of the committee, and I will start from that side so that we can introduce each other, so that when we interact we know. Maybe we'll start here, because this is a very important part of the machinery.
My name is Winnie Ngwenya, ANC, Portfolio Committee on Correctional Service, Gauteng.
I'm James Self from the Democratic Alliance, Western Cape.
Albert Fritz from the Western Cape Democratic Alliance, morning.
Florence Nyanda, member of the committee from Mpumalanga, thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Connie Bly, Western Cape, Congress of the People, member of this portfolio committee. Thank you. Bye-bye.
No, Ms. Bly, you're not going anywhere. Chairpersons and vice chairpersons will introduce themselves as you start, but I'm going to allow the leader of the delegation maybe just to introduce himself.
Good morning, Chair. James Smallberger, Regional Commissioner, Western Cape, but assigned to lead the delegation. Chair, all the invited people, chairpersons as well as vice chairpersons are here. I just want to emphasize that Mr. Ramansi is not with the Correctional Services anymore, but Mr. Mkwanazi replaced the gentleman who left the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we then kickstart our processes with Mr. McKessler? You've got 10 minutes, sir. Introduce yourself, your position, and you've got 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Richard McKessler. I'm the chairperson of Parole Board in Kimberley, management area. Chairperson and honourable members, first of all, let me start with the challenge that I'm having, which is the notice that I've received to be here today, and also the organising to get myself here has caused some sort of confusion in terms of my presentation to this. But having said that, I managed to put something together for this meeting. Chairperson, as a board in the Kimberley management area, what was experienced for the past couple of years from 2007 when I started was the issue of post-establishment, which was incomplete. At this point in time, we managed to fill all the relevant posts. But the grey area still remains the community members that are representing the community on the parole board have not yet been appointed on their 3-year contracts. They're still on a month-to-month basis, which is really causing a problem because they've already been there for the past 14 to 16 months, if I'm correct. So in terms of our post-establishment chairperson, that is the current position. Furthermore, chairperson, when it comes to challenges in terms of the day-to-day running of the parole board and so forth, it's the issues when we get to the J36, which is your profile, offender profile. When we receive them, chairperson, we challenge the following problems. In Battery West, the management area, one of the places that I'm serving, is the venue where the CSVB sessions must take place. We're having the sessions in the office of the social worker.
Can I request that when you use acronyms, you give us the full name, because many members here are new. CSVS,
As I've said, our sessions are held within the community corrections offices in Buckley West. We also have a program whereby we encounter problems with the PT crimes in your 2761I cases, where your case management committees are not following up when the profile gets to us. The parole board has to postpone or give the person a further profile just because the information is not complete. Also, the issue of social worker reports that are incomplete, medical reports that are incomplete, religious reports, educational reports, also the contradicting of information within the reports. Postponement of dates for social work reports happens on a continuous basis. That the offender may stay more than his minimum detention period because of the programs which gets postponed continuously. Offenders with multiple disciplinary offenses not being degraded, the word there is degraded. They don't really get punished. Why, we don't know. But these are the things that we pick up during our sessions. Incorrect reports in offender profiles and your previous profile not available of the offender, for example. It's a problem. The other issue is the issue of suspended sentence inquiries not solved before the offender sees the board. It's a problem and it delays in terms of functioning or taking a correct decision. And then also, Jefferson, the issue of 14 days period for parole violations not adhered to by the case management committees. No information with regard to accomplices in the profile. Address confirmation, sometimes we find out that they are outdated. The solutions that we came up with, Jefferson, for that is that the adherence to quarterly meetings of all stakeholders, especially within our management area. The 14-day period includes community corrections because they are the ones that bring the offender to the center once the violated his conditions. Stakeholders that needs to be present at the sessions of the correctional supervision parole board, the social work managers and the chairperson of the case management committee. And also the regular meetings with, should it be AC or CC corrections at the center. And then it will also, the other thing that we also said is the solution to the problem of medical reports is the monthly meetings with the health section for medical parole and so forth. Chairperson, the issues of budget, I won't really go into the exact problems there, but what one picked up is that when we started for 2007-2008 financial year, there were no budgets so whatsoever for the parole board to function, and that created some sort of problems. But what we did then, we ensured that a full budget for all the activities and programs should be community outreach projects and so forth for the parole board, promoting the functions of the parole board. We budgeted for all those things for 2008-2009 financial year. But, Chairperson, once again, as you would also recall, the issue of belt tightening, our budget has now been reduced with 40.89%, of which we have to run our programs for the duration of this financial year. So in terms of our budget, those are the critical issues that one could raise in terms of the budget available for the parole board. Then the issue that I've just raised when I started my presentation, the issue of the technology, you would see on the page I outlined 16,000 for computer hardware and system. That was specifically for a laptop, because sometimes you'll find out that here we are today here and most of the information is on a desktop in the office. And these things were great, and that's why we budgeted for it, and it was taken away without any consultation. Chairperson, in closing, I would say the other challenges with regard to my operation is the fact that I've experienced the hostility of the fact that I'm an external person, I'm not wearing uniform, therefore the acceptance in terms of me getting the right help or assistance to run the parole board to be effective. It's a problem. There's that hostility, or can I say contestation of territory within the management area that I am. And that is really a problem to me. Also in terms of for the past years, the issues, HR issues in terms of performance management was conducted, but nothing was forthcoming, no conclusion in terms of that. And for the past financial year, I was still not, because I've raised the issues of what happens to my performance assessment, for the past year I wasn't even assessed. In a nutshell, Jefferson, that is my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. If you can just, and everybody else that follows, can you just give us an indication in terms of your operation? The chair, the deputy chair, how many members regularly attend, and is there participation by GCS? Just very briefly, as you give us a presentation, we want to know, are you the chair? Is there a deputy chair? Is there participation by DCS, which is a requirement? And how many of your members? It's no use coming to say you're the parole board, but there's only two of you. Then you're not the parole board. So if you can give us, so that when we start asking those questions later on, we have a sense who you represent and how effective are you. If you could please tell us.
Thank you, Chair. As I've indicated with the full establishment, I'm the chairperson, we've got a vice chairperson, we've got a secretary, got two clerks, and then, as I've said, the two community members, and they are attending regularly. And as I've said, the challenges that we are having, but we're trying to, it's not forthcoming, but we are trying to have always the head of the centers present when we are there, as well as the chairpersons of CMC and community corrections officials.
Thank you very much, sir. Can we move on to the fourth slide?
Chair, maybe just to find out, Sanishu, you have a soft copy, and we're just waiting still for Chair. Then I can propose that we maybe can go to the third one while they're sorting out the administration, please.
We don't have a hard copy for that.
Unfortunately not, Chair.
And you can't talk off the cuff, ma'am.
Okay.
You can.
I can.
So talk off the cuff. We want all of you to give us your presentation.
I'm Sipati Dichabe, the chairperson of the parole board, responsible for court stay management area, which includes the new private prison Mangaung Maximum and the surrounding five outside stations. The parole board consists of myself, the chairperson, The vice chairperson was appointed on the 1st of April this year, and we have two committee members who are on monthly contracts, renewable, not the 3 years as expected by the Act. And we have a secretary of the parole board who is a member of the department, and we have two clerks who are also members of the department. My challenges, the chairperson and the honorable members of the portfolio. The first is the sentence in the non-parole period sentenced by magistrate, where magistrate imposed that offenders must stay for a certain period of time. So I can make an example. The trend is inconsistent. You'll find magistrates in Lady Brent sentencing offenders to be in prison for 80% of their sentence, which is against the Act or DCS Act, and only for minor crimes like housebreaking and theft. And if you look through into the in-depth and inquire from the offender, you'll find that it mostly gives where housebreakings were done on white premises. Then the sentence would be the 51 and 52 of the Criminal Practices Act of 1997, which I think is an inconsistency in the sentencing of those offenders. The other is also, I've experienced now lately offenders who are children in prison. About 2 weeks ago, there was one child who was 15 years sentenced for 3 years, 2 services, 1 eye, who was supposed to spend almost 8 months in prison. I tried to interfere with the child's court at the one-stop center. I set up a meeting with the magistrate to find out why is the child located at court free maximum when it's a child. I thought it was to be a child. And on the warrant, the magistrate said that he had indicated the child must go to a reformatory. And according to the magistrate, there are no reformatory centers in the Free State, so they've got to locate anywhere else outside the Free State, which is a challenge to these children. There are about 3 of them that I've referred to the parole board. I did try to request that the deputy minister to interact in that, which is a great concern for children to be in prison, especially in a maximum prison like Court State. The other challenge that I'm also facing, Honorable Chairperson, is that we find that there's no participation of the SA, South African Police Services, as proposed by the Act, to be part and parcel of the parole board. Because according to the Act, there must be a 7-member on the board. It's myself, the chairperson, vice chairperson, the 2 committee members, the secretary, 1 member from SAPS, and 1 member from the Justice. But this institution doesn't present anyone to be part of the parole board. We have raised this concern, but then the SAPS sometimes assign someone to come to sit on the parole board. The other challenge that I'm also facing with the parole board is the lack of acceptance, as my colleague from Mogadishu said, that I'm a chairperson of the parole board. It looks like when it suits the management area, I'm a member of the management area because the person was made to the portfolio committee as part of the management, and my position was the deputy director falling under the same management board. But when meetings are held within the management board, I'm excluded to say I'm a community member. So that clearly doesn't say who am I in that management within the management area. Looks like when the management area suits, when things suit them, I'm a member of the management, and when it's not, I'm not a member of the management, which to me brings a lot of confusion, even interacting in things that are done within the management area. The other issue, Honorable Chairperson, is I'm not sure what is my salary level within the department. This, I did make a request to my regional commissioner to say that I'm on my salary advice. I'm a deputy director, a chairperson, which in my case will be, I'll be falling within the same salary level as the Department of Corrections deputy directors. But on my inquiry, I was informed that I'm not a deputy director, I'm a chairperson of the parole board. My salary level is determined by DPSA. So the Department of Reserves is not responsible for assigning my salary. So I don't fall within any salary level of the department, which to me, it doesn't generate clarity. Because if I fall within the Department of DPSA, there are benefits that are allocated, for example, for members who are on contract by the DPSA. So I don't also qualify for that because the department say no, they're only assigned to people who have special skills like the psychologist. So I don't know where do I fit within the structure of the Department of Social Services or the DPSA. That's the other challenge when it comes to my salary. Maybe on the positive note, my success as honorable chairperson, I was afforded the Matibandisane National Award by the Department of Social Services, which really showed that my input in especially victim participation in the parole board, by the Department of Justice. I was afforded that award in 2009 as an award winner. I have successfully defended the department at litigations in court. We had about 36 motions of applications.
Sorry, ma'am. Can I, with all due respect, not to you, but to everybody else, ask that we deal with the challenges and the problems. All right. Just the challenges and the problems. The end goal is to improve correctional services as a committee. I take what you're saying, ma'am. But I think we're more interested in what it is that we can do going forward to make sure that this department, which is a critical department,
operates. I think on that case, I think that I can rest my case there.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Could we then have Ms. Zippo from St. Albans?
Thank you, sir. This is Riavelu Sipo from St. Albans Management Area. I'm chairperson of the parole board in that area. And we've got our vice chairperson, who's also from the community, two community members, and one clerk from DCS, one secretary from DCS, who are fully functional and they are attending regularly. The Eastern Cape has 9 approved and financed parole boards. One is unfunded. That one is in St. Albans. St. Albans is supposed to have 2 parole boards. That was the situation when I came in 2005 because of the number of cases. Now, but unfortunately, up to this end, it's the only one parole board is functioning, and we are also a roving board. I have to attend to Bedensi, that is outside PE, and again in the other part in Northland, that is in PE. And then this Eastern Cape region is 8 approved and financed parole boards. We've got 1 in Amatole, Middle Rift, and in Southern Management, East London, Mthatha, and all the chairpersons or the parole boards in the region are roving boards. All the parole boards in the region were located in Newcastle for traveling purposes, and there are 9 newly built parole board offices in the region. Meetings are held with the regional commissioner and deputy regional commissioner. Now, coming to the challenges, I only have 5, and I'll be very brief. The first one being there is a lack of formal provincial structure for the assistance and support of victims. We're really struggling to get this to be together. But as I speak, attempts are made to formalize the victim structure at a local level. We must remember that these victims are from the community. And we, as chairpersons of the parole boards, are also coming from the community. Meaning that when we go home, we are at times confronted by the victims. Yeah. Like, yeah, I've seen so-and-so in the street. He's outside there. And what are you doing, you guys? You are only concerned with the offenders inside. But what about us? And that's the question. Sometime in 2006, we were promised by DCS that there will be a formal structure for the victims, where the victims will be counseled and so on, but up to now it has not yet been done. So what we have done, we are just doing informally, you know, some meetings with correctional supervision, and we're going out as chaplains. As chaplains of the parole board, we're working very hard. We are wearing many caps because at St. Albans in the prison, I'm chaplain of the parole board. Outside, I become a social worker. I become a psychologist. I become a community structure. because we cannot see where the people who can do this work. That is challenge number one. And challenge number two is unavailability of supporting documents for profiles. That is now sentencing remarks. SAP 69, what type of crime was convicted, and SAP 62, when I speak about that, I speak about now the prognosis of the offender, you know, the previous convictions. We lack that, especially sentencing remarks, because the sentencing remarks will help us to see the mind of the magistrate who was presiding at that particular day. Why did he give this guy 15 years? When it was only housebreaking and theft. Why did he get a life sentence? Things like that, they help us a lot. What was in the mind of the magistrate? But unfortunately, we don't have, not a single sentence remark do we have since my period at St. Albans. And I have also noticed that it's the same problem with all the other parole boards in the area. And when the people that are supposed to be checking on these documents are the CNCs. And unfortunately, they will always say we don't have the budget, because I understand this should be purchased from the courts. But now, there are dedicated officials that are appointed to alliance with magistrates and SAPS, that is South African Police Services, to obtain the documents. We also, as chairperson of the parole board, I've been there to the courts, but without any help. And yeah, there is a case flow management forum that was established and to regulate the processing and obtaining of the profile required documents. Now, challenge number three, I think my fellow colleague has already spoke about it, is the issue of the contract, the exit of the CSPB chairperson. It's not been really communicated to us what is really going to happen to us. You know, when we look at it, we feel that we have so much invested in the correctional service. But unfortunately for us, we don't get clarity, especially this assessment. You know, the assessment will help us to know where are we standing. I am doing a lot of work at St. Albans, you know, but unfortunately, nobody will say, well done, you have done this far. You know, nobody is communicating to us, as my sister has just said. We are not even involved in their management meetings, in their executive meetings. At times, you are a community member. At times, you are a manager. And that really is not something that is good for us. Now, coming to the fourth one, the fourth challenge, is about medical parole and the role of the doctor in handling parole applications. This issue is a very thorny issue because you find that you get two opinions from two medical doctors. One would say he's approving medical parole. One would say, no, he's not approving a medical parole. And in that case, you as the chairperson of the parole board, you become confused. You don't know what to do. And we are not, we are just laymen, you know. We are not trained in that particular field of being medical people. We will not know even the terms that are written by the doctors. We solely rely on them. I was suggesting, or as the parole board, we are just suggesting if something can be done, a training of some sort with social workers and the nurses who are the initiators of the medical parole. And then again, the last one will be non-compliance with the risk assessment outcome. In the profile, the G226, there is a document inside that is called the sentence plan. Now, that is when an offender is incarcerated from day one, somebody must be there to assess the offender. His needs, his human dignity, and all the stuff must ask whether you want to go to school, what do you want, and so on. But you find that by the time, say, after 8 years, this fellow image has been incarcerated. By the time you come to see the parole board, nothing has been done. Nothing has been done. The G2R6, 326 is incomplete, as also this other man has also already said. Nothing, social workers, also you find that there is nothing that can make you to make a decision about this offender. So this also gives us a lot of problems, especially the sentence play, according to the needs-based program. So those are the challenges that we have. But as I say, fair. We are busy on that. We are trying our best as the parole board because we have just decided because of this, I don't know how can I put this one, that, you know, there is this, I don't know what I'm right when I say segregation of us being community members and them being DCS officials because they look at us, you know, sometimes down. But we don't mind for the good of the department. We are doing our best because we are inside the prison and outside the prison. After quarter to four, I'm still doing my work because I visit the homes of the offenders. I visit the homes of the parolees. I visit the homes of the victims for restorative justice. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Could Mr. Mkondwana, please?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I am Zaxile Mkondwana, the chairperson of the parole board at Paulsmo. I have a vice chairperson who is coming from the community now as well, a secretary who is a DCS member, two community reps, plus two clerks, who are also DCS members. My parole board is serving four correctional facilities, medium ABC and female. And the offender population is 1260, 821, 817, and 422, respectively. You asked the question, Chairperson, whether we are effective, you know, or working, you know, or not. My answer to the question would be a big yes. And that is evident on page 4 of the presentation that I actually submitted. The number of cases, for instance, that we saw during the financial year 2008 to 2009 was 1,752. For the financial year 2009 to 2010, we have seen 742. We make it a fact, Chairperson, that we conduct hearings in correcting parole board sittings. In order for a parole board to correct, there has to be the community member, Chairperson, and the secretary. That's the minimum number of people who have to be there. Coming to the challenges, Chairperson, as you may be aware, we ideally want to have a situation where South African Police Service is involved in parole board. Yes, they are involved, but there are challenges that we're actually facing. These subs, you know, people, when they actually come to our parole hearings, in some instances, they come empty-handed. They talk about the problems that they are actually experiencing in collecting, you know, information around offenders, you know, and stuff. They are complaining about the workload that they actually, you know, have. And in the presentation, on page 5, we are asking for whoever is in power and in authority to dedicate at least one sub per three parole boards. Because currently we have one sub member, South African Police Service member, per five parole boards. My feeling is that if one sub member per three parole boards could be availed, that would go a long way towards alleviating the overload that the police are complaining about. And also, the second challenge, Chairperson, as you may be aware, rehabilitation is at the center of what we are actually doing. There is a threat to rehabilitation at Portsmouth, because we have a gross shortage of professional staff, people like psychologists and criminologists. If I'm not mistaken, currently we have one psychologist who is serving the whole Portsmouth. And then we don't have a single criminologist, yet we have people who are in for criminal, you know, offenses, you know, and stuff. We have to ask for outside help insofar as criminologists are, in fact, no concerned. And, of course, they come with a cost. And thirdly, Chairperson, there's this VEP program that we're actually talking about, the Victim Empowerment Program. We would love to have a situation where many victims, of crime prone to our parole, hearings. But that is not the case, Chairperson. Many victims or complainants are so poor that it is practically impossible for them to travel to and from the place where the hearings are, in fact, held. And then we have a situation where some of the victims do not want to see the offenders, but were devising mechanisms of overcoming that particular, program. Because I think it was on the 11th of June when we actually had an imbizo where we're trying to market this victim empowerment, program, making a clarion call to all the victims, of crime to come to our parole hearings. And that is beginning to bear fruit because we're beginning to see them trickling to our parole, hearings. And then also, Chairperson, the medical parole, the release of offenders on medical, grounds, and stuff. There are challenges. I wouldn't love to appear as a broken, record, to repeat what my colleagues have, in fact, said. But there are challenges, there. Because in most instances, you find out that the policy says, something. And you as a parole board, see something when you actually visit an offender who's very sick. In most instances, doctors will write, their reports. But their reports will not mention or state the fact that this particular person is terminally ill or this particular person is at the last or final stages of terminal illness. And policy says, in order for a parole board to release a person who's ill, that particular person must be at the last stages of medical or last stages of terminal, illness, and stuff. But doctors would refuse, or doctors would say, I'm not God. One doctor said, I'm not God. I'm not able to say whether this particular person is at the last stages of terminal illness. Instead, I'm praying for this particular person. So those are the challenges. Policy says something, this side, and then we see something else. And some of the people do not meet the requirements that are, in fact, reflected in the policy of the department. One person, for instance, would see that this particular person is completely, paralyzed. He has no capacity to commit whatever crime that a person can think of. But because this particular person does not meet the requirements of the policy requirements, that particular person, we as a parole board, cannot grant that particular person parole on medical grounds. The other problem is the one of the human element, Chairperson, because we have to take decisions that have something to do with people. Human behavior is unpredictable. We are often lambasted for taking, some of these decisions. Because a person would come to you as a person, a born-again, Christian and stuff, and then would grant that particular person, parole. And the following day, we hear that particular person committed, another crime. So there's that human element that is involved in the work that we're actually doing. And lastly, but not least, is the question of the corporate, issues, the question of contracts, Chairperson. Because we do not know what is going to happen, to us or to me come 1st October 2010. Yet I've spent most of my years, focusing on the parole board work, investing a lot on DCS work, trying to have a situation where DCS where DCS reaches, the goals that it intends not to reach. But I do not know. But there's that dark cloud that is actually hovering above us, as Chairperson of the parole board. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, sir.
Makova.
Good morning. My name is actually Makova, not Makova. There is an O between the M and the K. I am the chairperson of one of the two boards that we have in the Johannesburg management area. My board is consists of myself, the chairperson, a vice chairperson, one community member. The other community member was promoted, is now the vice chairperson. We have a secretary who is a DSC official, and we have two clerks. And then the other board, I suppose Mr. Jones will be able to, that is his board. Now for our board, we have a few challenges. Now, one of our challenges is the sentence plan, which has already been discussed, and I don't think I'll go into it. The problems are more or less the same. But then within the sentence plan, we find that because this plan was not properly done as Mr. Chavez described, often you find that offenders who are serving very long sentences and have been sentenced in terms of the 1959 Act, always they go through their programs at a very, very fast pace. That is, within the first few years, they do all the rehabilitation programs, the programs by the professionals, the social workers and the psychologists, and they also do all the skills that they require. Sometimes you can't really get what the true impact of those programs has been to them, but they look at the law and they come in, they demand that they want to be released at one third. Even if a person is serving something like 35 years or 20 years, they demand that they would like to be released. And at the same time, we find that on the other hand, the short-term offenders who are actually the recidivists, the people who come back over and over again, who are given short sentences, are not given the amount of attention that the long-term people are given. The long-term people do need that, but it should be spread over, meaning that if the sentence plan had been done properly from the beginning, we wouldn't have that problem. Now we end up having all these litigations in court, because the offenders demand that they want to go out. So, but we have found with the short-termers, we have made an arrangement with the heads of our centers that the social workers and the psychologists and so on should try and really concentrate on the short-term people in the beginning, especially the ones, especially when we get to female, we find that a lot of the problems that the female, the sentences, they are sentenced there for repeated theft and fraud, and you find that somebody may have had has about say 25, even up to 50 previous convictions, and for the bulk of those convictions, the person has never been sentenced to jail. It has been suspended sentence, it has been a fine, and so on. And then when they come into prison, they have that whole background. And this is the only time that they have where they can really be rehabilitated properly. And we feel that attention should be given to those, because mostly you find they are mothers who really need the attention. And then with the long-termers, we feel they have the time to spread this over. And it also doesn't put the parole board into this position of having to deal with all these litigations in the end. So far it looks like it's working. The social workers and the psychologists and the other people are trying to rehabilitate, to cooperate. And then the other problem we have is the problem of skills. The rehabilitation path is not complete if the people haven't had development skills. Now, in Johannesburg, there is a shortage of skills. And it's a very big prison. It's a very big prison. It has 4 centers. And we find that, like the same people I've been describing just now, the economical crime and the other, and the younger male offenders, those are usually the ones who have never really had a chance to continue with their education, and they ended up in crime. And we find that with those, it is really important that those people should be given a chance to do some skills, and when they get out, at least, you know, the possibility of them reoffending is very low. Now, that problem, so far, we haven't been able to deal with it, because in the past, the Department of Labor has offered a few short courses, but during the last year, they haven't really been as regular as they used to be. So that is one of those challenges which we still have to face. Now, what we do actually is that when somebody is a maximum, if as soon as they become a medium and we feel this one really needs to go through the skills development, we recommend that he's been transferred to a prison where there are skills which this person can undertake. And then the other problem, challenge is the issue of professional staff. The social workers have to deal with very heavy loads. And then we find that the social workers, all the time they have really is for them to do what we call the CANT program. There are these specific programs which the GCS uses throughout all the centers. And those programs are the ones which are supposed to be to rehabilitate these offenders. But we find that some of the offenders take it like reading a book, and also for the purposes of appearing before the parole board and saying, I've done a program. Then we often find that there are certain offenders who really need individual attention and should get proper intervention. And unfortunately, the social workers don't have the time because of their very heavy load. And management area has employed a few more social workers, but we still feel the loads are still very heavy. And also we didn't have a psychologist for the last 2 years, but at the present moment we have one psychologist to deal with all the 4 centers in Johannesburg, and we don't know how she's going to manage. In the past, what we had to do is that sometimes the magistrates definitely recommend in their sentence remarks that this person, when he or she gets into prison, they must see a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and so on. And when we didn't have the services, we would have to transfer that particular person, say, to Pretoria, where there are psychologists, or to Krugersdorp. But after a while, that didn't work as well. But now we've got one psychologist. We don't know how she's going to manage, but at least it's a start. And then the other one is medical parole, which has already been discussed here. The challenges that we find with medical parole is that sometimes we find that because you need medical certificates from 2 doctors, the recommendations, then you find that sometimes one doctor's opinion differs from the opinion of the other doctor. And like the gentleman said, doctors are reluctant to comment on prognosis or estimated life expectancy. And yet, according to the Act, those are the issues we have to look at. They tell you, well, they are not God. But we have one doctor sometimes who's very brave and says, this person is going to live for 1 month. And then we also find that for medical parole, there's also the issue of the support system. Sometimes the families will not manage or are not capable to take care of the offender because of poverty, overcrowding, and lack of funds, and no transport to be able to take the person to hospital and so on. And other times the families cannot be traced. And then if you try alternative placements like hospices, they want payment. And then we also have the problem of the foreigners. When the foreigners have to get medical parole, Home Affairs is not very keen on taking sick foreigners to repatriate them, and we get stuck. And that is the time when you find that sometimes people die in prison. And so the one of the foreigners we have raised, and I think this one is going to be gone into by the department. But the issue of the support systems, up to now, we haven't been able to find out what we can do. But then the remedy of is releasing, and also we find that sometimes the nursing staff panic, because if somebody dies in prison, they have to give a report to the regional commissioner. And they panic, and then they refer all sorts of cases which really don't deserve for medical parole. But what we have done now, we have our resident doctor who is very good. Even if the other two doctors who come in and are not residents have made their recommendations, we always go to our resident doctor who understands other issues besides just the illness that need to be considered. And we almost always discourage hurried releases on medical parole by trying various forms of treatment. This has helped in the past, and we found that there are some people whom we should have released now, who are alive after several months. I think I paused at that point.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Vincent Jones. I'm the chairperson of the other board, the Johannesburg Management Area. The chairperson, we do have a vice chairperson, and we must compliment the department that this is something that we've been worried about, the appointment of vice chairpersons, and about 2 months back we did have vice chairpersons appointed. But the secretary was a member of the department, two clerks, and two community members. In our sittings, we do try a lot to have subs represented. And in terms of the Department of Justice, there's still a challenge. We have not had a single member from Justice coming to be part of the parole sittings. The chairperson has asked a question whether or not we are effective in the execution of our responsibilities. I would say yes or no, and no, meaning that we are not where we used to be, but we are also not where we should be. I think for us to be able to move to where we are supposed to be in terms of the functioning of the parole board, there are issues that we need to look into very seriously. The first one is a question of the independence of the parole board. I think through Act 111 of 1998, as a department, as a country, we have made progress that through that act, which ushered this new system of parole boards, we have had a good amount of independence, which can still be enhanced for us to be effective and should be protected. At the moment, the independence of the board relates to the management areas. Regionally, parole boards still fall under either social reintegration or corrections. Nationally, still fully falls under the Department of Correctional Services. And we are saying that maybe the start that we should begin to make is to have parole boards coordinated regionally as well, to ensure that this independence is protected. Parole boards at the moment are not standardized in terms of their functioning. Regionally, they are not properly coordinated. Hence, there is a lot of inconsistency, not only in terms of how we do our job, but also in terms of remuneration, benefits, and so on. For an example, we do have members of
chairpersons who get certain checks, others they don't. Those who got them, their letters of demands to repay them and so on. This is not a complaint, but just to say that there's a need to coordinate the functions of the parole board from the region so that they are more effective, they are standardized and properly run. This question of independence also is very important so that we don't so much depend on the officials within the department for resources. Administratively, for an example, if you have to go somewhere, you have to fill in a trip sheet, and a trip sheet has to be signed by another director, and you have to run after him and finally get him signing the trip sheet. Sometimes it's like a favor, and I scratch your back, fill the blanks. And so we have to try as much as possible to avoid that the parole boards are not so much dependent on resources on the officials of the department. And probably the step that we should move towards, which we cannot reach overnight, is to look at parole board independence as that of the judicial inspectorate, for an example, which thing, like I say, we cannot immediately reach. The HR issues I have already alluded to with my colleagues have, but the main thing is just to standardize the whole issue. There is also, Chairperson, the question of review board. I think some of us recently, we've been spending more time writing affidavits because offenders are taking us to court. And we have proposed a system whereby offenders, before they go to the judicial court, should exhaust all the immediate remedies first, like the question of review boards, before they can go to the court. And I think it's very easy for offenders to go to court because they don't have to pay legal costs. And at times, it's a kind of an outing for them. And you have someone who is due to be considered for parole in 15 years, taking the parole board to court today. And there's no responsibility, if he takes the department to court, that city doesn't have to pay the legal costs and so on. And we believe that has to be reviewed a little bit. My colleagues have alluded to the question of medical parole that really needs to be reviewed. And I think it should not be only the department that reviews medical parole, but also with medical doctors. They have to be part of the process. Because we believe that by virtue of the oath of the medical doctors, their interest, they will always look after the best interest of their patients. No medical doctor would wish his patient bad. We recently had a medical parole that we have declined because the recommendation from the doctor is that for the best results, this offender must be placed on medical parole. I don't want to say we don't release for the best results, but basically the act says that we release somebody for the purpose of dying a peaceful and conciliatory death in the hands of the family. And so somehow there is a conflict of interest that we have to have a look at. The question of victim participation has been covered by my other colleagues, and in that note, I'll say thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. From Leocorp, Mr. Maimela.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Portfolio Committee, ladies and gentlemen. At Leocorp, we have two vice chairpersons. The second vice chairperson has been recently appointed, so I think that's the reason why we prepared one report. There are two vice chairpersons serving four institutions at Leocorp Management Area, which is Medium A, Medium B, which is Juvenile, Medium C, and Maxima. We have a population of 5,000 sentenced prisoners. Our structure consists of two vice chairpersons, one secretary, who is a member of the DCS, that is Department of Correctional Services, three community members, and then that is currently operating as one board. We have two clerks, and we are a non-roving board. The first challenge, which is the shortage of staff, bear with us, we've written it under corporate services to show that it's beyond our control. We are running short of two chairpersons, one secretary, and one community member. Two vice chairpersons act as chairpersons during sittings. Appointment of chairpersons will assist us in servicing four institutions well. The second challenge is stakeholder involvement. Participation of stakeholders such as the South African Police Services and the Justice Department, who are supposed to provide us with members to help us in the parole board sittings, is a challenge. Although a quorum is attained, however, it is important that such stakeholders do attend our sittings. Then we have the third challenge, which is victim participation. We struggle to get the details of the victims because offenders would also say they hardly know the victims. It would be much appreciated if we could get this information from the courts before the accused are sentenced and admitted to our correctional centers. The fourth one is medical parole, which some of the members here alluded to. From the beginning of this year to date, we received only 12 profiles of offenders who have been placed out on medical parole. And since I said we have close to 5,000 sentenced offenders, and we have a lot of people who are sick in hospital, a lot of offenders, by just placing 12 offenders on medical parole, it seems as if it doesn't give sense. We need to have more because I believe there are more of those offenders who are sick in hospital. Then the last one is offender profile. In some instances, we receive profiles with no SAP 62, which is crime description, SAP 69, previous convictions, sentence remarks, as well as support system. That means the family of the offender, sometimes they are not interested in taking him back when he comes from prison. We rely more on the case management committee, which provides us with profiles for this information. However, this will be addressed through regular meetings between ourselves, the parole board, and various case management committees. And lastly, which is our conclusion. In conclusion, we are doing well as a board, and that is evident from the fact that we have no backlogs as we try to maintain our service delivery. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Mkwanazi is going to give a presentation as well, or have you done them for? You've made one for both of them. Do you want to add, sir?
Chairperson, members of the committee, regional commissioner of the Western Cape, members from various parole boards, receive my greetings. Chairperson, my colleague has rightfully indicated our challenges, and I'm sure you will get that our challenges are almost similar. So I don't want to make a reputation. But I can just say that, as he indicated, we will appreciate, and we could appreciate, if we can get at least one secretary in Lukko for an effective execution of our duties. Because currently we operate as one board, whereas we need to be two. So we can clearly appreciate if the department can give us one additional secretary. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Mukisi from Boxer.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, my colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for this opportunity. I am Franz Mukisi, the Vice Chairperson of Boxbeck. We don't have a chairperson. I'm doing both. I am appointed as a Vice Chairperson, but operating as a chairperson from the very first day of appointment. Presently, I have a secretary who is a member of the department. I have one clerk, also a member of the department, and presently, I have no community members. They have since got employment elsewhere with the other departments, and I have timelessly informed the management committee and the regional office. And I have been told that I will not be getting any community members because of the belt tightening. And then it was impossible to operate as a parole board, and then I made means. I went to Joburg, and I'm borrowing their members for 2 days in a week when they are not using them. I went also to Modabi to ask for their members on the days they are not using them. And that is how I am surviving. Otherwise, the board cannot operate if it doesn't form a quorum. And that is where I am. And I'm serving four centers, center A, which is a medium, center B, which is a maximum, center C, which is a juvenile, and center D, which is Heidelberg, is a satellite of Boxbeck, and I rove to Heidelberg as well. Chair, I would ask your grace that my fellow colleagues who have spoken before me have really stressed some of these matters in my presentation. And I would ask your permission, if I can speak from the heart, to add some of the things and to really contribute effectively towards this exercise. It has been told that a man can speak from the heart, but he must be careful that if he has guts, his guts must be equal to his brain. And I think there's some bit of a balance in me, I hope.
But let's see if your guts are equal to your brain for 5 minutes. 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like, first of all, to hint at the point of the which has slightly been touched by my colleague, Mr. Jones, the independence of the parole board is a very crucial matter. I have gone through some of the summary of the minutes of the portfolio committee on the 14th of May 2003, and again the 21st of June 2006. And I have tried to look and to sketch into the history of when this concept of the new parole board was talked about, and what was the intention, and how the boards have gone so far, and what are the present status. And it's good that we must reflect to say, as you have stated in your initial opening of the session, that what is it that we have done right, and what is it that we have done wrong, where can we improve, and I think we have come to that point. It is critical, and it was mentioned in those two instances when the department presented those discussions and intended programs to be initiated, And one of the things was the independence of the parole board, which they said it is to function without interference, but not totally independent from the department. But I think we need to bring it specially here and particularly. It is of crucial importance. We are operating within the context and environment of the department as the parole board. Chair, let's place on record that there are a bit of interferences from the department in our operations. And those, unfortunately, those interferences, the department sees them as interventions. But unfortunately, those interventions end up as interference, whether it be from the area managers, from the head of prisons, from the area coordinator corrections. On a weekly basis, we experience interference from the management areas where we operate from. And I'm just scared. And I can make this calculation that the parole boards will be soon facing an era where even the independence of the parole boards will be challenged in court. There is a recent landmark case in the parole board of England where the parole board was taken to high court and the offenders won the case two times in the high court and in the appeal court. What was the matter? It was that when the parole board sat down to consider the case of the inmate, they did not have the independence that is required by the Constitution. The minister did interfere in the work of the board. His recommendation or advice that was given to the board, it was meant to go beyond just the mere advice. But instructions which the board literally had to implement. And on that technicality, it was established that the board did not have the interest, the independence it required. And I think the parole boards of South Africa, we are heading to that direction. If this so-called intervention by the management areas and those in authority is allowed to continue, we will find ourselves in that instance, because definitely, Chair, that intervention is not intervention, it's interference. And it will do us no good to really hide that, and we must stress that. The credibility of the parole boards is challenged in the newspapers, in the community. Nobody trusts the work that we do. And I think as the parole boards, we want to reclaim that honor and respect in our place within the department, within the judiciary, and within the communities as a whole. And that is very important. And our only problem as we talk about this independence, we want to contribute towards the correct administration of the parole boards. But unfortunately, what is happening presently, like we are sitting in this exercise and then the report will be sent back. But when the shortcomings are corrected, what is going to happen? A committee apart from us is going to be formed. Instructions are going to be made elsewhere on our behalf and on the work that we do. But none of us will be appointed to say, because you are the ground soldiers, you work on the grassroots, you know our problems better than we do. Let's involve you. Let's use you to correct those shortcomings. Chair, let me just conclude by saying.
Conclude this. That if nobody contacts you, you can contact them and tell us about something to contribute.
Okay.
I mean, you have a responsibility as well to say, we see this is what's happening on the ground. Nobody's contacting us because they don't want to talk to us, but we think this is what can be of value to the focus, and we'll intervene on your behalf.
Okay. All right. But then the other methods really are stretched out. And on the just the HR issues, if the vice chairpersons who fully operate as chairpersons without appointment, without remuneration, from the first day of appointment is really critical. The training of the chairpersons and vice chairpersons of the parole board really need an overhaul. We work with the sentences from
all right. The rest thanks. You forfeited your right to present from your presentation. I've given you more than 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
Can we move on to Mr. Msimang from Barberton?
We are also in the process now of engaging local business people and motor companies to consider if maybe they can be a good Samaritan who may donate a very good program. We will make submissions also to the area commission regarding the impact of the moratorium on the people of Asian folks in CCF. This is not a national office, but also an engagement. The Code of Practice in Parole Board has the acting area commissioners have also been made aware of the possible negative impact of the migration policy on households in the next 12 months. In summary, I hope this presentation has been a lot of perspective on the situation on the ground and that the incident has made this presentation any less of the importance of the program. I remain committed in rendering the service to the police and to the government. My colleagues and I have two candidates here in public. This will be an exception.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Shabangu from Devon.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, the RC, and colleagues. Chair, with your permission, I'd just like to correct my initials. Definitely not MT, but DD Shabangu. I cannot explain where those other initials came from. The full name is Boniface Shabangu, and I'm the vice chairperson from the Durban Management Area, where we have two boards, which are based at Westville Correctional Center, and the total sentence offender population as at 2009, September 06, we had 6220, and then it's further divided into adults and the youth. Board number one, The composition, we have the chairperson, Ms. M. Adams. Then I'm her vice chairperson. Then you have Mr. S. Chaka, who is the secretary and a member of GCA.
Sorry, Chief. Where's Ms. Adams?
Ms. Adams is currently fasting Ramadan, so she was unable to travel. And I think she did convey that to the secretary of the committee. The two clerks, that's Mrs. Chole and Ms. J. Naidu, and there's one they can post in September 2008. And all the clerks are members of GCS. We also have one community member, Mr. Ntombela, and there's one they can post since February 2006. The second board, which is also a roving board, we've got the vacant post of the chairperson since May 2007. And the vice chairperson there is Ms. Zanele Ngwani. The secretary is Mr. Keso. And also they got two clerks, Mr. Majola and Mrs. Mabichwa. And there's one vacant post since April 2008. And they also have only one community member by the name of Mr. Mbambo, and a vacant post since November 2007. On the methodology and procedure, Correctional Supervision and Parole Board 1 is responsible for Medium B and C correctional centers. The second one is responsible for Mzinto, Medium A Youth Center and Female Correctional Centers. The board engages in regular liaisons and consultations with the CMCs, case management committees. The CMCs forward the comprehensive G326 as a profile report to the respective board. The board registers the receipts of the profile report, and the clerk formally checks and verifies documentation and accuracy of calculations, hence then hands to the secretary for final verification, and then to the rest of the team through a verification of profile report. On completion, the secretary, in consultation with the chairperson, determines the agenda. The board sitting is scheduled, and all relevant stakeholders are informed of the sitting. And sittings currently are being held at the board's offices since August 2009, relative to being non-center based. However, medical parole applications are considered at the Correctional Center Hospital. The board is formally introduced to offenders scheduled for the sitting by the secretary. Offenders considered and informed of the decision taken through a formal minute procedure based on their profile report. Victim is considered upon request physically or with a written submission. Chairperson, as per your directive, we also have challenges. The first two pages are on challenges, then the last two pages are on efforts which we engage in to try and address the challenges. And we've also tried to group our challenges under those that are related, under five different topics, and the first one being that of the offender, the non-availability of sentence plans and offender risk profiles, with the exception of centers of excellence. And in Durban, we have two, which are female and youth correctional centers. Some offenders, I think this also has already been mentioned, rejected by families and communities, particularly the youth, which adversely impacts on sentence expiry dates and re-offending rates. The issue of restorative justice or complaints involvement, its nature and sensitivity, as well as the risk and recidivism relative to current unemployment trends. The issue of Section 79, that the medical parole has been addressed. On our part, we see that it's totally reliant on medical reports confirming offender is terminally ill. And some offense offenders were released from 2005. They have recovered. However, policy does not permit for renouncing of Section 79. Only reoffending and failing to comply with parole conditions does. Absence of immediate responses from the material office in respect of life applications. And also we do have offenders who are sick, whether it be HIV and AIDS or cancer, and those that are physically challenged, ending up having to be taken care of by other offenders but are not terminally ill and cannot be considered under the same act. Challenge number two is to do with the SAPS, South African Police Services. As per policy, they're supposed to be represented and they are not. And the issue of not being able to obtain 62s, SAP 62s and 69Cs, crime description and previous convictions. And the same applies to Department of Justice. They're also not being represented. And the issue of their sentence remarks, all those documents are critical for consideration process. And thirdly, the processing of court, I think it was also alluded to by Mr. Jones, processing of court actions against DCS without all internal options having been exhausted in terms of the Correctional Services Act 75-8, that referring those matters to the review board before they can go to court. Challenges continuing. Number four, we're looking at the scarcity of resources, such as IT equipment, updated computers and programs, laptops, printers, and a functional email and internet service all year round. The fax machines, the visual equipment, security risk versus office structure and design. Because where we are at the moment is not the office that's been built for the specific purpose. And lastly, the CSTB personnel, the board personnel. I've already spoken about the vacant post. That's of a chairperson, two clerks, and two community members. The issue of center-based and non-center-based, which came up with the holding of the OSD. Current community members' contracts have expired and they're being renewed on a 3-monthly basis, and permanency is awaited upon. And lastly, the whole thing about chairperson's contracts, the possibility of renewal. And here the sentiments go towards, it's not only to do with the uncertainties, but it's also to do with the experience and skills, as well as the teamwork that we have managed to build that we'll have to do away with. Now coming to the efforts. On challenge one, these are efforts that we're engaged upon to try and address them. The region acknowledges the need to maximize the implementation of sentence plans and offender risk profiles to the National Strategy Plan. Numerous options are explored by social workers with little success. That's to do with those offenders who are rejected by their families. Social workers and case management committees play a key role. However, the complexities of certain cases require special skills. That's to do with restorative justice or complainant involvement. The victim bears all costs, including therapeutic service, versus all costs for the offender borne by the Department of Correctional Services. Engagement of offenders with external service providers and CITES for training, development, and employment opportunities. This is to try and address the risks of recidivism versus employment trends. And as far as Section 79 goes, applications in respect of Section 79 are considered immediately and the medical fraternity is engaged as and when it's necessary for clarity. Policy amendment appears necessary to address the identified challenges. In brackets, terminally ill, to die a consolatory death, close brackets. On the second challenge, SAPS responded favorably to the presence of the representative. However, commencement is affected by the need for clarity in respect of funding of this post by SAPS. And secondly, court liaison officials currently being utilized to access SAP 62s and 69Cs. Significant progress is noted and due to being repeatedly reported at local SAPS forum meetings. On the Department of Justice, this too has been repeatedly reported at the magistrates forum meetings, though it requires intervention from high-level authority, as the Department of Justice is not aware of such representation. Secondly, funding was secured in the management area to access sentence remarks. And lastly, under that, formally registered with legal services and state attorney's offices. That's the one the court's not appearing to be overlooking the function of the review board. And on the scarcity of resources, this was reported at all levels, as well as on the board personnel. All that was also reported. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, and to everybody else. Before we open up for engagement, only fair that I say to you that before this engagement, I had received reports that many of you were not prepared to talk in a meeting of this nature if the department was ready, for fear of victimization and so on. Well, I've got good news and bad news for you. The bad news is that whatever you said here probably was monitored by the department, because this is a public meeting. The good news is that if anybody victimizes, anybody victimizes for this action or any other action, you have our assurance that we will take that matter as far as humanly possible. So when we open up for interaction, you better speak your heart or forever hold your peace. Nobody will come to Mr. South after this meeting and say, I wanted to say this, but I was scared, and then expect the committee to take it into consideration. You speak your heart or forever hold your peace. That's the one point that I wanted to make, so that we're all clear in terms of this interaction and how serious we are as a committee in making sure that we do our work. I'm just worried that at least two or three of you said you don't have committee community members, or only have one community member. The Act says there must be two community members. That's what the Act says. So the question of your legitimacy becomes paramount in my mind. It becomes paramount in my mind. The Act is very clear. So somebody is in contravention with the law. Somebody is in contravention with the law. We can't do it half right. You either have a proper board or you have nothing at all. You can't have a half a board and expect us, as the voice of the people, to say, well, we've interacted with these people, we're quite comfortable. And that we asked you in the beginning, how effective and how efficient are you? Because FOSS is a critical department, and you're a critical role player. So I just wanted to put that point, that at some point we'll come back as a department, as a committee, and deal with this matter. So hopefully members will not raise this matter independently, but we certainly will deal with it. The second point that I want to raise, and maybe you must explain it to me. You know, the Act says the minister must appoint, not may, must appoint one official from the department nominated by the commissioner. Now, many of you have indicated that you have got members from the department, but they're clerks or secretaries. I'm wondering, was the intention of this to have somebody that is going to do admin work, or somebody that's going to help with the policy director, if I could put it that way? Was the intention to have an admin clerk, or was the intention to have somebody who would be able to give input from a DCS point of view? Because if we are circumventing, if what I'm saying is the intention, and we're circumventing that by putting somebody who's going to answer the phone or to pick up faxes, then we have a problem.
in your interactions, and maybe those that are more experienced than I am can just answer that question. Because if that is what's happening and it wasn't the intention, then we need to act faster rather than less. We can't have people deliberately undermining the act and the chairperson being aware of it and doing nothing about it. And it will never happen, not in my time. So when you respond, yourself or even members, if they could just clarify those things for me, because that will help me in my own mind when I summarize the actions of today's interaction. Having said that, I want to then afford members of the committee. It is, I think, 25 or 26 minutes past 11. If you wanted a 5-minute break, you could have, or we could carry on straight to the business. I'm looking at members. You want a break for 5 minutes? Carry on. Carry on? Break? Carry on? Carry on. Huh? Okay. Some said no break, others said break. I'll give you a 3-minute break until 11:30. 3 minutes. Just go to do what you need to do and be back.
My experience, it was very, very definitely the intention that the parole board should be independent of the department and should operate without fear and favour and come to their conclusions completely independently. That was why we changed the act, and that's why we migrated from a situation where historically the vice chairs of the parole boards were officials from the department, and how we created the system where it was entirely community-based. And quite honestly, I mean, what I heard here today horrified me in terms of the restrictions on your independence. I mean, it is absolutely unacceptable that you have to chase around some person in the department to get somebody to sign a travel sheet, or that you should have to operate for 3 years as the deputy chair when you should be the chair without remuneration, or that, that one is dependent on other people in the department to allow one to do one's functions properly. But equally, I would suggest you can't have your cake and eat it. If you want to be independent, you can't be part of the management meetings. And you can't, you can't be, I'm not sure whether I can say this, but you can't be half pregnant, if you know what I mean. You've either got to be one or the other. But I mean, when we first came here, Mr. Smallberger announced that he was leading the delegation. Well, he shouldn't be leading the delegation. I mean, I'm delighted that he's here, but you know, you should have been here independently, in my view, of the department. So really, what I'd like to ask is whether it would make sense, either in law or in practice, for the budget of the parole board to be completely separated from the budget of the DCS. And if so, whether one would have the administrative capacity in the parole board to actually account for that money properly. Because, you know, with independence comes then the responsibility to account for it. My specific question is asked to Mr. Shabangu. And we heard a lot here about the problems relating to medical parole. And specifically, Mr. Jones, I took very careful note of what you said about the purpose of medical parole isn't to get, what do you say, the best result. The purpose of medical parole in Section 79 is very, very, very clear. Now, there was a decision taken by the Parole Board of Durban Westall relating to an offender called Mr. Shabir Sheikh. And I want to know from Mr. Shabangu whether that board satisfied itself that Mr. Sheikh was in the final stage of a terminal illness or condition, and if so, on what basis did the board make that decision? And secondly, what are Mr. Sheikh's parole conditions, and is he adhering to them? Thank you.
Mr. Pickler, thank you, Chairman. Firstly, let me tell them my apology for coming a bit late, though I did report to the inspector later, maybe. Now, firstly, I just want to speak about how this board was formed. Because originally, the board was composed of all the structures of the the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, the secretary, everybody was just the correctional services members of the staff. We challenged that. Challenged the question of fair treatment of releasing inmates. That some of these members may be prejudiced towards a particular individual or whatever. So we must get some people from outside, that is chairperson, deputy chairperson, two committee members, and also as the staff and justice. Now the purpose of e-justice, presence of e-justice and presence of the police, that is the staff, was that because they have arrested these people, that is the police, because the justice has sentenced, they must be part, therefore, of deciding whether this person has the right to be released. Is it fair that he must be released or not? Because they are the people who have committed. Because the tendency, once they are not there, you are going to carry now the responsibility of being criticized by the community and by the people outside. That why did you release that person? That person did not qualify to be released. That person had committed a serious offense and all that. But if now that responsibility was carried by you, justice, and the staff, then they will be able to come to the defense and say, no, we felt that he must be released. He or she must be released. That's one point. Now, I think one weakness of you presently is that you seem to have a number of members of who are these clerks, for instance. That's why there's a lot of interference. If they were not there, there would be no purpose, because that is not the law, because the law says only one member from the DCS must be part of that structure. Then all the other members are community, are coming from the community. That's the point. We're part, for instance, we tell that we must be part of the selection. I was doing an interview. Members in the assembly. Okay, so each of these members were doing in all the provinces, all the members of the committee were part of the panel that were deciding on who is the best person to be a chairperson, who is the best person to be a deputy chair. Now, I think that is that point here. I think you should restructure your correct your structures. I think that's why there's a lot of interference there. You must only have one individual from the DC. Yeah. And also the question of his participation, the question of justice participation becomes very critical. Especially prostitution. Prostitution can be part of that one. That's one. Yeah, well, yeah, okay, the question of independence. I think that immediately have the correct structure. Then we definitely feel that you are independent because you have only one individual who is answerable to you. Now, the question of victim participation and the community. You know, South Africa has the problem, that problem of seeing is an offender versus the state. That's the law of South Africa. The offender versus the state. You don't have a situation where it's the offender versus the victim. In New Zealand, you know, they have a peculiar type of law there. They say, once you commit an offense, the victim must come and give evidence how he had suffered. And in fact, he must put the cause of his or her suffering. And then the state now will decide what payment you make as an offender. That's it. So it means it's the offender versus the victim. So it's the decision of the victim how you should be sentenced, and the decision of the victim how much he incurs in medical whatever for what you have done to him. You have killed somebody or you have injured somebody, whatever. So I think that's how it works. Yeah, and then in South Africa, we are trying to move away from the redistributive type of justice.
We had agreed that we will allow members to three times. You've now dealt with the structure, you've dealt with victim participation, you've dealt with independence. Can we allow you to say the last one? Otherwise, yes. We'll run into problems.
Now, you know the question of the medical. You know, in medical, in prison, it's very difficult to decide whether the person is terminal or not. It's very, very difficult, I'm telling you. It's a critical issue and very sensitive at the same time. Because, you know, inmates, they can pretend. I was in prison, also. I know how they pretend. A person can pretend, he can be very sick in prison, very, very sick. But once he comes out, you find him moving around. And they're shocked. And the doctors even believe that person is seriously ill. That's how the question of prison affects people. But once it goes out, that person is just. So it's very, very, very tricky and very difficult to assess whether that person ought to be released on medical or parole or not.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Lai.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think you have covered me with your input or your remark about the community members, but my question is around the criteria this board is taking when it comes to release the ill or, you know, if you're saying a person is very, very ill, what criteria do you take and say this person is ill? So you are releasing that person. And secondly, Chairperson, my question is around the contracts. How many years are these parole board contracts? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Murata.
Yeah,
having listened to the presentations, I get an impression that there are lots of people who are in prison who should have been released. And probably there are also a lot of people who have been released who should not have been released. And this is the function of the dysfunctionality of the system. So it looks like to me, it is a comment, there is a challenge even for us to once again revisit these matters, probably in another forum, in a different form. The second point is the composition of the board. It's not only about compliance, it's also about the validity of the decisions of the board. To me, the most fundamental issue. There's a question mark that I sit here whether the decisions they have made, if those panels, you are not compliant as to the composition, whether those decisions are in fact valid in law. So I think that's another matter. And another one is there are a lot of policy issues. I think your presentation has put a challenge to us in terms of ethics, health ethics, doctors' ethics, vis-a-vis the functions that they are required to play according to the act. I think those things we need together to think deeper as to what they mean and how do they enhance or hamper this work. And the last point is your function seems also to be quasi judicial. Therefore, the question is whether I see other people are saying you should be independent from the department, but it's not clear to what extent you should be independent. But I think what is coming out of this, from my perspective, is also the need, as I say, all these things they are raising, policy issues and proper administration. The need for justice, police, and prisons to see themselves as a justice system, so that whether people have been sentenced already, it doesn't mean the Department of Justice has been relieved of its responsibilities. As long as the person has entered the justice system and remains in the justice system, it's the responsibility of all the departments in the justice system to attend to that person until that person leaves the justice system. In other words, go back to the community. I don't think there's that integrated, broad approach the way people are being handled. So there's a pigeonhole approach, and once we have sentenced, the person must be attended by another one. So I want you to also think about this independence as independence from what? Because this is just a narrow approach of independence from the Department of Correctional Services. I don't think for me that is the better approach. So I see that you have raised that issue, which validly so, and it has been attempted to be addressed by the Parliament before. But I think we need to look at the independence as against the justice system, your role against the entire system. At the moment, I'll leave it there.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Fritz?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I want to continue with the theme of independence because I think Mr. Self and I think Mr. Madaka is making some, Madasa is making some valid points. And I think we're going to have quite a deep or in detail discussion in our committee on the issue of independence regarding parole boards. But Mr. Chair, I want to put at this point in law, it means that very, very clearly the parole boards, 52 parole boards need to be established. And I almost get the impression when I listen to the presentations today that it's more management problem, the problem of managing the establishment of these structures throughout the country. Issues like vacant positions, issues like motor car allocation, issues like remuneration, whether people are on this level or that level. And it seems that if this project is once again another indication of the many failed projects that the department just can't get right. And that's my submission to this committee this morning. And it's a sad indictment that Boksburg can't function, they can't have a quorum because there are two community people have not been appointed. I think it's incredibly sad indictment on the department. The second point I want to ask, a more specific question, a lot of people talk about victim participation and empowerment from the board, but in the Eastern Cape we have one prison for females in East London. How do you get a woman who offended in Patensi to get that victim up to East London? I'm just, you know, just making, you know, and the idea with local community people, the rationale around that was to get communities involved. I think that was always the rationale around the act. Then lastly, from Boksburg, I would like to know, if we talk about interference, what is the nature of interference from DCS? You know, what exactly is it? Is it just not giving a car, or is it specifically related to the decisions that you have to make, the kind of quasi-judicial decisions that you have to make, as Mr. Matata was referring to? And then, okay, thank, I think that's my last, my 3 points exhausted. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Fritz.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also, thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, to me, it looks like all the presenters, they've got one challenge. Firstly, Chairperson, I want to say that if there are structures of parole board are not on place as supposed to be, this parole board that we are having, it won't work effectively. If they compose of the Chairperson Board Forum are not as the Act saying. Chairperson, I want to know that how are the Chairperson's Board advertising themselves to the community if on their structures there's a lack of community person? How are they advertising themselves to the community? Another question, Chairperson, is on the victim. When I'm listening to all the presenters, in terms of the victim, the work of the parole board is not effectively in terms of the issue of the victim. And if they lack to communicate with the community, how are they going to succeed in terms of the victim? Because, you know, Chairperson, in terms of the victim, it's so hard for the person to forgive. And we need to get people who are experienced in terms of counseling these people. The presenters, they were talking about the inmates that are out, that are not accepted to the community. They find difficulties in terms of that. Yes, they must have that difficulties because there's no proper structure in terms of accepting the inmate when the inmate going out. Like a correctional community forum, I want to know how is their relationship with them. In terms of the vice chair, most of them, they are vice chair, acting as chair, and they are post. That was advertised 2007-2008. I want to know, Chairperson, what is the answer from the management in terms of that? What is the response from the management? And another thing, Chaperson, is the last one. Okay. Chaperson, in terms of the statistics, I'm not satisfied. I was expecting that the parole board, they will say, I'm from Johannesburg. Since I started, I've rehabilitated so many inmates, and we've got so many that are ready to go out. We never get that. And you'll know that we are facing the challenge of overcrowding, whereby when we go to oversight, some inmates, they will tell you that my sentence is 10 years, and now I'm 6 years. And I was supposed to see the parole board, but since now, I'm not yet seeing the parole board. I'm not even in the program of the rehabilitation. Thank you, Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Abram.
Thank you, President. Chairperson, just a bit of a comment. You know, when one listens to the presentation that has been made, and you know there is a word which we normally use in Afrikaans, but I won't repeat it here. Haka hierka. But I can at least say, Chair, hier kom groot moeilikheid. That is evident. Now, Chair, just a few questions. First, teacher, and I hope that the responses will, like some of the presentations, be brutally frank and honest. Because what we must remember is that we are characters on this particular stage. Tomorrow, we will not be there. There will be other characters we have to hand over to the next generation. And if we hand over something, let us hand over something which is solid, which is worthy of being handed over. Not something that we will be ashamed of, that the following generation will say, look at those bunch of fools. What did they leave for us? The chairperson, with regard to the number of social workers and psychologists, I'm not going to ask you of the numbers that you have. It's evident that they're totally inadequate. Have you reported this to the department? Is the issue salaries, or is the issue the fact that the people are not available, or that the people are not willing to work in these circumstances with offenders and that sort of thing? Chair, this whole issue of some of the boards having made certain decisions and not having permanent members on it and going to borrow members to put up a quorum and things like that. Of course, the credibility of those decisions can be questioned, to my humble mind. And have you perhaps looked at the legal implications? And I think you should look at the implications, because, it is so that an offender who is in difficulty, who wants to get out on parole or whatever, will look at every avenue. And there are NGOs outside that are keeping a watch on what happens in government. And they'll do their utmost to come to the rescue and assistance of these people. And our democracy allows it. So we need to know where we stand on those issues. And you need to know your story if something hits you. Finally, Chair, this business about, two doctors examining the same person and coming to two different conclusions. And this comment I heard that, yes, but they say that they are not God. But we all go to doctors not because they are gods, but we go to them to at least give us an indication of what our state of health is. And that's what we want from these people, to give an indication that the state of health of this person or this offender is such that he or she suffers from advanced ABCD or whatever, and that the chances of this person surviving for a lengthy period of time are, in terms of medicine, in in terms of medical science, limited or whatever. We're not expecting them to tell us that this person is going to die tomorrow or whatever. So I feel that that's a minimum that one expects from these people. And whether when you ask for these reports, I mean, you are asking for a report not on the state of health of the person in terms of medical assistance or whatever. What you are asking for is that if this person is in a position to remain upright for the next couple of years or whatever, give us an indication. We realize that indication is based on their examination and on their finding. It is not something that we expect them to give us in a watertight manner, that you are going to hold it against them in 6 months' time if this person starts taking part in the Comrades Marathon or whatever. Thank you, Chair.
Listen, Daka.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nomakaya Mdaka from Eastern Cape and Ngqongqo. Thanks for your presentation. As I'm listening here, and also I'm new in this committee, I'm beginning to wonder or worry if are you the relevant body to ask this, the most of the questions that we are asking here, because in my mind, I should think that the department was supposed to be here. The department is in for a hijack here. As we speak, I can sense and I can also see that you are facing a big problem. Much as I'm still on a learning curve, much as I know or I think your duty is to assess the qualified inmates that are ready to be released, and also you go to the community and tell the community that we are the parole board, so the community must be also involved to whatever you are doing. So I'm beginning, Chairperson, to be a little bit confused. And number two, my worry is about the department. And number two, I heard in Mr. Mkondwana's presentation in Western Cape, he was presenting under POSMO 2. Is there any POSMO 1? How many POSMOs do you have in Western Cape? You must bear in mind that, Mr. Mkondwana, we are new in this committee, so we don't know your term. And when you check the St. Albans board spread, the Eastern Cape, the whole Eastern Cape is covered. So how many boards specifically in Western Cape do you have? Do you have only a POSMO board, or how many boards do you have here? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Ma'am Faliso.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to thank all the presentations. Mine is also that I wish there was one national parole board. I could have asked the question. But the one I'm covered with most of the other colleagues, this sub 59 and sub 62 information, who is supposed to bring this information forward? And are there any mechanisms in place that have addressed this lack of this sub 59 and 62 information? Because then I'm looking at this lack of information and looking of 12 people who were released, on medical parole or on parole, and there are still 5,000 inmates. It looks to me that that is where this overcrowding is coming from. That is where we are sitting with the brand of overcrowding, because there are processes that lack urgency. I won't bother the parole board really with many questions, because these questions, as my colleague has said, it's, one has to ask these questions to the department. And my second question is also at St. Albans. They were also supposed to have two parole boards, but there is only one board functioning. So I don't know who is selecting these boards or what is the process of who is looking after these boards. But I'll pause for now, Chairperson. Most of the questions really I want to ask the department.
Thank you, ma'am. Ma'am Nyan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the representation. My question is, seemingly working the relationship between the parole board and the department is not good. Because whenever you want to be with them, they are not there. My second question is that, here is this man, Judy, is supposed to be released. And now what you say is before he be released, you contact the family, and the family rejects him. And what do you do? Where do you keep him? Let's assume the sentence is towards to be finished. And where do you keep him? And you can't keep him in the prisoner forever. You must take him somewhere. My third question is that I heard one of the board members saying there's this thing of the betting check. Is your salary not equal? How come others are getting betting check, others are not getting? And the other one is the vehicles. One of the members said we don't have the vehicles. We travel public transport. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to deal with them. Let's deal with them in this session. There were specifics to Shabangu. I think there were specifics to St. Albans. I think there were specifics to Paulsmore. And specifics to Boxburg. So can we deal with those specifics first? And then everybody else can participate wherever you want to feel. So, Durban will then be followed. Let's have a look on my form here. St. Albans, and I'll remind you what are the things that I think we need to bring to you. I'm saying it will be Durban, and you will follow St. Albans. Was on for Boxburg somewhere. I'm trying to see it on my list so that the. Oh, yeah. Then Boxburg will follow. I think there was something specific to Boxburg, and I'll remind you when it's your time. And then Portsmouth. Then we'll open it up for discussions around the more generic things. Sir, from Devon.
Thank you, Chair. Responding to the Honourable Member's question, I'd just like to first start by saying that generally, if you are not satisfied with anything to do with medical placement or consideration in this case, we approve a further profile in all cases. And this is without the exclusion of the said individual. Yet, the second time, based on the reports that you received from the doctors, the answer to that question is yes.
And I think this matter was further taken up by the Health Professional Services Council through the investigation that they conducted. And I think the results of that were made public. Just to say that the guidance that you received from the state doctors, there was nothing unbecoming with those reports that were submitted. And we have already alluded to what Section 79 says. And then on the question of conditions, whether he's keeping those conditions or whether he's violated those conditions, if I captured that question correctly, the procedure is that once the conditions have been approved, the person is now handed over to Community Corrections or COMCO. There's a supervision committee, and there's a supervision official who is supposed to supervise the person that's been placed out and to make sure that those conditions are being adhered to. Failing which, there are certain steps that are followed. And ultimately, if everything else fails, that person will only be, as a last resort, be brought back to the parole board to either amend those conditions or to take those person back. And in most cases, it has happened where somebody is placed or violates conditions or somebody reoffends, and that person is supposed to be brought back to the parole board and to be reconsidered within 14 days and either be placed back or have these conditions be amended or restricted. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. St. Albans, there's a question about victims' accessibility because they're so far away and there's only one St. Albans, as the member put it. How do you get people from afar afield to come in and visit, whether it's the parolee or even the victim that must come to the parole board? And then there's the issue of why one instead of two at St. Albans. Parole boards, why one instead of two? If you could respond to those for us, please, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. Honorable committee, let me first respond to this one of the two parole boards that are supposed to be there. I was employed in 2005, and then when I got there, I was told that there is a second parole board that is supposed to be there because of the caseload. Because I have five prisons in one St. Albans, in one management area. That is medium A, medium B, maximum, pedency, and North End prison, where most of the females were accommodated, but they are no more there, they are in East London. So, up to this day, I've been inquiring, I've been phoning head office, I've been phoning regional office, what is the situation? Because this is a lot of work. We don't get rest. There are too many prisoners, but we're told there are no funds. And then I contacted the head office. They said, no, this second parole board was funded long time ago, contact the regional office. Regional office didn't know anything about it. Now, the most amazing part is that now in this new system of building new offices for the parole board, at St. Albans, there are two new buildings for two parole boards. But unfortunately, even the area commissioner was not aware. That's what she said to me. I'm not aware that there's a second building, a new building of the second parole board, because we don't have money for the second parole board. So, unfortunately, honorable committee, I don't have anything to say. I don't have a reason what is going on. The only thing that I know, we are working day in and day out. We are seeing thousands of prisoners per year. As I'm speaking right now, for this year only, we have already seen seven, we have already paroled 430 prisoners out. It's quite a lot of work because I have to be in pedency on that day and I have to be at medium B. And it's really quite tiring. That was the one. So I don't have any answer for that one. And again, we have not yet occupied the new offices. That is what is amazing.
who are still there. They say we don't have money for the cables. It's such waste of time. I'm so waste of time, waste of money. I'm sorry to put it like that. Because when I look at it, I'm looking at my time. I'm supposed to be leaving the department by next year, June. I've never entered in those new offices. Having labored so much, having done so much work for the Department of Correctional Services, I don't know who will enter those offices. When I spoke last week, I think it was only last week, earlier commissioner, can you then go over and occupy our offices? Okay, we've heard that there's a belt tightening. We don't mind, even if there is no event or function of opening of offices, let us just go there and feel how it is, because we're about to go. No, you can't. No, you can't go there. We don't have the money. We will wait until. That was the response. So now it's towards the end of the year and you are leaving next year in such a pitiful situation when you look at the offices that we are supposed to occupy and that were built for us as new chairpersons. That's the story. Now coming to the victim. Unfortunately, this structure, there is supposed to be a structure that is looking after the victims. But as I say, I think I said it in my statement earlier on, we attended a workshop, it was in 2006. Then we were told that there is a victim structure that is going to be formed and you'll be let know what you must do. But only what has been done so far, we've been sent pamphlets to go about and match up the parole board and the victim participation. So up to now, nothing has been done. Now, for me to answer this one of how do you then organize this sitting if the offender is in East London and then the victim is in PE, that has not been done. And that is because they are lack of funds. As one of my colleagues has just said, it's very, most of the victims, they are poor. They don't even money to travel from New Brighton, that is one location in PE, to St. Albans. They won't come. They say, we don't have money, and DCS, so we also don't have money. So that is the situation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Boxburg, you spoke about interference from DCS, and members wanted to know the nature of that interference. Indeed, they captured correctly what you were saying.
Thank you, Chair, and the Honourable Committee. Last year, the Regional Commissioner of Gauteng established a task team after there were various concerns, and then it was appointed and the Vice Chairpersons, the Chairpersons, plus some members of the CMC came together, and all the concerns were frankly laid on the table. There was a report that was tabled, and the issue of the interference was registered there. Particularly as it was experienced in the whole region, not particularly from Boxburg as a center per se. What were some of the interferences mentioned there? One, the issue of high profile cases. When there is a high profile offender, and then something comes up in the news, and everybody is there advising, do this, do that. No, I don't want it done that. And the board felt that in that case, then they really cannot do their work well, and that was one of the problems. And then one of the things was, for instance, this case of the medical parole. There were centers when the board go to the hospital to visit the offenders and to see the sick offenders, that now the management center wants an entourage of the whole management, the area commissioner, AC Corrections, and whoever there. They wanted to accompany the chairpersons there, and you know, they would say, do this and don't do that. And that was mentioned as well, and it was a big problem as well. The other fact was the monitoring of the parole board in the centers, which the present arrangement now is that the area commissioners would be the ones supervising the parole board. But sometimes they are so busy, then they would say, I really can't monitor you. And then I am instructing the area coordinator corrections to be your supervisor. And the board says, no, that cannot be right. You can't delegate that authority. And the relationships now between the parole board and the area coordinators was really not well.
Are some of the things. Yeah. We just wanted a sense very clear that there is. And if we need specifics, if the department demands of it, we know where we'll go to. Yeah, no, maybe you should submit that to us as well. At some point, maybe you should submit that to us. Because I think it's something we would need. Paul Small, the question was, why Paul Small 2? Is there Paul Small 1? And how many parole boards service the Western Cape?
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members of the committee. Paul Small 1 and Paul Small 2. There is POSMO 1, and it has its own chairperson, a secretary, two committee reps, you know, and clerks. And the person who's actually acting in that particular parole board, two, parole board one, is a DCS person. I've heard through the grapevine that, okay, there is a person, there were interviews that were actually conducted, and there is a person from the community who has been appointed as vice chairperson of that particular parole board. Because POSMO is a big management area, and so people saw it fit and proper to have a situation where there are two parole boards, one and two. And then the second one is a roving one. It roves between Maximum or the admission center and Goodwood, whilst I'm dealing with the other four correctional facilities at Cornwall. And then the number of parole boards in the Western Cape, I'm speaking under correction, because the regional commissioner is here. If I'm not mistaken, we have 10 parole boards, you know, in all in the Western Cape. Thank you,
Chairman. All right. For the sake of direction, so that we don't go all over the show, and it's going to be very brief because time is against us. I think the independence is a matter of policy. We'll deal with it as a committee. There's not very much you can do. The issue about structures, correction of structures, the length, so it's the correction of structures, where there should be one member, you've got lots of people that shouldn't be there. That's, I'm saying this is must be dealt with. I'm taking it off my list. Then there's the length of the contract. How long is this contract? That's something that must be dealt with. And then the parity of salary. Why are some getting 13 checks? This all has to do with this with the structure. Can you guys decide who's going to talk to us on those matters? Very briefly.
Just one matter I overlooked. I had something strange here that you have to buy documents from the Department of Justice. Buy. Just one clarity on that.
No, we'll get to that. We'll edit the list, yeah, but you're not going to ambush us again now. Can we deal with correction of structures, length of your contract? We all be hearing that you're ending in 2010, but how long have you been around? And this whole issue about salary parity, some getting 13 checks, others, I guess it's about getting a proper. You guys must just talk. And when we think we've got a sense, we will say thank you very much and then move on to the next one. But let's thank you first, ma'am.
Thank you, Ned. Thank you, Chairperson. The first thing about the member of the Department of Justice assigned to the parole board, in terms of their policy, they've only assigned, according to the contract, they've assigned the secretary of the parole board, not an additional member to come and give input to the parole board. The secretary is appointed by the regional commissioner. And all the two clerks are doing the clerical compilation of those parole profiles and noting and all the document that needs to be compiled and notices to community members and to all the structures. So the department allocates the secretary to the parole board. That's where I think that's where the department has to interfere. Then the other issue of the 13th check. When I started in 2005 as a chairperson of parole board in July, I got my 13th check in 2006 and 2007, but I was requested to refund it again
because he said that it was an error on the administration to afford me that attendance check. So in the city of Northern Cape, we are not being privileged to get a attendance check. Our contracts are stipulated as 5 years, terminating at the end of, for me, it will be at the end of July 2010. So I think all chapters of parole boards, the contracts are for five years. But there is a confusion with the vice chairpersons. The vice chairpersons, some of them are 3, some of them are 4 years. So we don't actually know what the standard duration of their contract.
All right. That deals with salary parity. And I'm saying we just need for ourselves to empower so that we deal with the department having a sense from you. So if it's not exhaustive, don't worry too much about it. Unless there's something that you must tell us that will create a totally different attitude when we meet with the department.
On the salary again, our salary notches don't match the deputy director of the Department of Correctional Services. We are currently on 304, chairman of the parole board. And we don't, there are no salary levels that we've met. If you look through all the salary levels of the department, there's nowhere where our salary notches are fitted in. When we created this thing, we are told that no, our salary is determined by the PSA. So we actually don't know when we get our salary increments in the end of the year. There was this of OSD. We were told that we're not part of the OSDs. So actually, there's nothing. No one talks to us about our salaries. We don't know. We just wait for that time when we say there's an increment.
Thank you, yes, sir. Very briefly, Doctor.
Yes, sir. I think the other thing is, let's take on the issue of the vice chairpersons. In 2007, all the vice chairpersons who were appointed at that time were all appointed on the same day with the same contract and even the term of contract. But our benefits on that, there are some of the vice chairpersons who have received the dating checks.
Fine, we've got the sense that clearly we have now established as a committee that the lack of salary parity is a reality. We don't want to get into the details.
Okay. Can I just
want yes. include, yes, sir.
Can I just add, Chair, that also our pay slip says we are the assistant directors, but when we go to the meetings and there are formal meetings when we are introduced, we are told that we are a rank above the ASDs, whereas our pay slip says we are ASDs.
No,
and the department doesn't have that
between
the deputy director and the ASDs.
So I think we've got a sense. We need to deal with recognition so that there is understanding across the board in the pay problems. There was this question, and if you don't want to answer it, if you cannot answer it, don't answer it, because we will process it ourselves. The validity of your decisions on the basis of all these things that have been wrong, the composition, the makeup, all those things. What do you guys think around the validity? Yes, thank you, sir. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I would say that the decisions of the board are still valid on the basis of the fact that there is one composition of the board which talks about who is supposed to be in the parole board, who has a voting right, which is the chairperson, vice chair, secretary, two community members of staff. That is the composition and justice. That's the composition. But also the policy would talk about the quorum, which consists of the chairperson, the secretary, or the chairperson, or the vice, the secretary, and one community member. That is the quorum, which have the capabilities of taking binding decisions. Thank you.
Now, that is clarified so that everybody here hears it and is on record. Can somebody talk to us about your awareness campaign? I think members spoke about advertising, but more correctly, it's the awareness campaign amongst communities. Your coordination or cooperation of something called Community Corrections Forum. And also
when the family of Vincent Smith doesn't want him, where do you keep him? You guys could deal with those three. Let's take the two gentlemen at the back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, what, before I start answering that question, I think one must also say that there's no uniformity in terms of how provinces operate when it comes to promoting this program of people to know, like, promoting the parole board in society. Secondly, promoting victim complainant involvement within the parole board. Chairperson, in the Northern Cape in particular, I'm representing the three parole boards within the Northern Cape on the Interdepartmental Committee on the Victim Charter, which is spearheaded by the Department of Justice. And then also we've got the provincial VEP forum, which is headed by Department of Social Development, but Social Services and Population Development in the province. And within that, those structures from a provincial level, that's where we submit our programs to say as parole board, this is what we are doing, and this is how we intend engaging with the community outside there, for them to understand how to get involved in the parole boards and so forth. And these programs then get attached to months, meaning that at the end of the day we've got calendar events for that whole year where the parole board goes, exhibit, create awareness. But once again, I think one of the members have mentioned the issue of how do we get there, how do we promote, do we have the relevant resources and budget in terms of creating the awareness. And I must say to the House that it's a serious, serious struggle. Management, really, if there's a problem, I don't know. But management does not buy into the thing of parole boards must attend, for example, a community police forum meeting. To them, that's a must. There's nothing like that. You're not also supposed to attend the crime prevention meeting. And you're not supposed to attend also the JCPS cluster meetings to create this awareness. And also when, for example, we recently had the visit of the select committee on correctional services, and I was only told after the members of parliament passed by, and then I was called in and said, there's a member who said, an offender that say he qualifies for parole, but the parole board don't want to see him and all those things, and there was nothing like that. Then furthermore is our programs are not, even if you budget them, budget is cost them and so forth, finance is saying that those programs are not critical. But programs are there, structures are there on the ground, and we try to get to these structures and inform them the role of the parole board, what are we doing and so forth. The last thing which is very, let me say it for me, it's a pain, for victims, the decision of the parole board when it comes to a victim, the presentation, whether we allow the victim to come to the parole board and make a presentation, that presentation does not have any bearing on our decision. And that really, when you look at what the victim charter is saying, and you look at the victim empowerment program is envisaged for the victim, then I think this is the right place where I can say that this House needs to really speak to all the relevant parties. Because we are there, we are willing to do the job. In a nutshell, that is how we promote ourselves.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think maybe in order to put this in perspective, let me bring a balanced thought of some kind so that you live here with an understanding that each region or management area has got its own dynamics. Like, for instance, I've indicated some of the challenges we are having in the LMN. But there are some goodies in this whole thing. Like, for instance, in our case in LMN, the regional commissioner has clearly indicated that he would want the chairpersons and vice chairpersons, the whole parole board, he would want us to keep our, you know, our community-based function, so that we do not all of a sudden turn ourselves into the Vardens, because that's what we are not. Such that there is that kind of a room to ensure that we become members of the community or participate in VEP, victim empowerment programs, participate in these structures as they have indicated. So I just wanted to bring that part. But also I want to address the question of the SED. I think it's the Honourable Member Umamiyant. When an offender does not have a support system, what do you do? Where do you keep him? Unfortunately, one of the requirements for parole is that there has to be a support system. What we do as parole board, we inform the SMs, the case management committee, and advise them that they should assist the offender to seek alternative support system. In case mother, dad does not want to accept them, maybe they should look at their uncles and all those people. But if all that fails, and maybe faith-based organizations, if all that fails, unfortunately, especially that because there was a concept of this daycare, what do they call them? Day parole. Unfortunately, it's a good kind of a practice, but we don't have those facilities. They used to be there, I'm told, but there are very few regions who have them. I think one of those that are privileged is KZN and Free State, but some of us don't have them. So at the end of the day, these people, they are released on their sentence expiry date. And when that happens, the best thing correctional services can do, we call them as parole board and tell them that bror or sister, we've seen you several times. We are seeing you for the last time today. You are finally leaving home in 6 months' time or in 3 months' time with no conditions. So they just go home. Thanks.
President?
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, I also just like to second what the previous speaker said, that it's true that in different management areas we have different experiences. It's my first time coming here as well, but I think it's mind-opening to hear what other colleagues in other management areas are experiencing. Just on the question of outreach programs together with community corrections, to say that in my management area we used to have, or to piggyback on those community outreach programs where we interact with the community and we also advertise ourselves to the community and the people learn to learn about our role. And lastly, that also the community where I come from, I'm also a chairperson of the CPF, that's the Community Police Forum, for many years, even before I joined the board, and I've been able to continue with that. So I'm still interacting a lot with the community. Thank you.
Can somebody tell us about the type of response you get when you raise the fact of lack of professionals? Many people said there's only one this, there's only one that, and one of the members asked the question of how does the department respond, and generally also the vacancies within, I suppose, your structure, I think it was what was like. We don't know the details. Is the department responsive to your plight, or are they dismissive of your plight? That's, I guess, the question that we're asking. Let's take Mom there from Joburg.
Yeah, the department is responsive, but I think the problem here is the issue of the salaries that they offer them. For instance, if I take psychologists are few and five in between, but the ones they get don't stay long, because then they get offers of better salaries elsewhere. And even the social workers, quite a few of them have left. because of the salary level. And not only the social workers, it's not just the salary level, but it's also the question of the heavy caseload. The department advertises the interview, and the people come forward, and then they stay a few months, or some don't even take up the post. So it's a question of the working conditions.
Thank you very much, Mark. Who is supposed to provide information on the S62 and the S69, and I guess that's linked with the comment of buying information. I think that was where the buying of information comment came in. But who is supposed to provide that? Because parole board chairs are saying part of our difficulty is that we don't get this information. The question is, who's supposed to give you this information? And then somebody talk about buying of information somewhere. I'm assuming the buying of the information is this type of information. If you could respond to those. Anybody? I want new hands up, please go. Other people are chairpersons as well. Why are they not speaking? If they are unwilling to, then I'll have to take their hands. Let's then take Durban and Mr. Jones. Yeah, if you guys could help us on this one.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of policy, when the offender is being admitted, all those documents are supposed to be there, but unfortunately this is not happening. And that's why in my management area, because of the sentence remarks, they had to be budgeted for, and then we have records having to apply for those. We, at the Durban, we're using Sneller recording. I don't know if they're using the same agency in other provinces, where we are able to acquire those sentence remarks. And then in terms of 62, that's the card description. We got those, we've got some, like we said, we've got a court liaison official who's got a good relationship with the police station and is able to get some of those 62s. And then, thank you.
Concerning the sentence remarks, they usually come from court according to the information that they give us. It usually given to a tender. Unfortunately, seemingly, it just diminished. So we know they no more get them.
All right. Somebody asked, and you don't have to give this to us, but I think it's something that might be important for us, your statistics for your term of office. If you guys could email, write, fax something to Cindy, that in my term of office we've had so many cases, so many approved. Because when we evaluate you in terms of your effectiveness, those are part of the tools we'll use. So if you could all give us in the next 14 days a summarized version of how many cases in your 5 years. MIC, Joburg is very concerned. But what we want is, we've been on the parole board, we've seen 1,700 cases in our 5 years. So many have been successful, so many we've returned. You don't have to give us too many details. We just want to see if you've been working. Because it's been 5 years, you've only seen two. Then you've got a problem. Then you have a problem. But we want that in writing, because you're not going to be able to give it to us now. I'm assuming there's a question of clarity then that you are asking.
No,
then it's fine. If you have your set, it's fine. We want them. We haven't seen them. In the light of transparency, give them to us also. We want to see them. Is it okay? Leokop, you've got something different. Leokop? Oh, no, I beg your pardon. It's not Leokop. I beg your pardon. Mr. Jones, yes.
I just wanted to make a comment also on the basis of statistics. I think my colleague is very right. And also this point was raised by Honorable Member Ngwenya and also talked about the issue of overcrowding. I think as a parole board, it's not that we don't care about overcrowding, but we try not to use overcrowding as a criteria to release offenders. We believe that they must have behaved well. They must have attended rehabilitation programs. They must have you know, and we must have assessed the impact that the programs have made in them, the support system, and all other things. So we try, it depends, to separate the two, the criteria and overcrowding. Thank you.
At this point, I want to thank all of you for attending. I want to indicate to you that this interaction was not in vain. There will be review of the legislation as it stands now. This will come in good stead for us, not only for the parole board, but I guess when we look at the review board and we look at the inspecting judge and everybody else, so far it was useful. I'm also aware that there will be an interaction between yourself and the department at some point, so that the department is also appraised. And we can only encourage you to be as brutally frank as possible. I think Mr. Abraham put it absolutely correctly. Be a coward and let the next generation suffer. Or be brave, and even if you get kicked, at least the next generation will inherit something that is sustainable. I do know that you're going to have an interaction with them. We can only advise you to be as brave as possible for the sake of the future. For the sake of the future. We are very grateful you give us that statistics in writing. If you don't, I'm sure Cindy will follow it up with you. We also wanted to make it clear that we know that you're not the entire board. We just took a sample. And we're hoping that this sample is reflective or accurate of what is happening across the board. So there's nothing magic for those that are watching us and will ask the question, but why did Boxburg come and we didn't? There was nothing magic about it. There was nothing scientific about it. We took a sample of about 10 people. Or 10 areas, brought you here so that we can get a taste, so that you don't think you're extra special or other people don't think they're less special. Thank you very much for your frankness, your openness. I think the committee is in a better position to interact with the department and also to add value. So from our side, safe shot. Yes, ma'am, you want to say
just
something?
Just one, please. I'm also looking at the idea of establishing a parole board at the maximum Mangaung, because I'm serving about over 50,000 offenders.
Yeah, no, don't worry, ma'am. We're meeting Mangaung and others next week, and we will deal with them when we meet with them. But for your interaction and your participation, we want to say thank you. Unfortunately, we also tightening. What did you say? Reducing costs or something? We're also reducing costs. We can't invite you to lunch. We don't have money for lunch, Cindy and I. So. Thank you very much. The meeting has been adjourned until we meet again. Thank you very much.